This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to On Target. I'm your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we are here every week to talk about subjects that we think are interesting and educational and topical and important for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. And it couldn't be more topical, educational, or historically important than to talk about a new book, which we're going to do today, which is called Profiles, Volume 1, Historic and Influential People from Buffalo and Western New York. And let me finish the last sentence, or the last part, in the 1800s. Now, you may say, how could that be topical, and how could that be current, and how could that be important? Well, of course, it is important, and it is topical because everything that's history, everything that's old is new again, and we have to learn from history, and knowing our history, what's happened in the past, always informs us as to what's happening today. And sometimes, as they say, history repeats itself. Sometimes that's for the best and sometimes for the worst, I guess. However, we're supposed to learn from history too. We're supposed to learn from our mistakes, and we're supposed to understand how we got to be where we are today by studying our history. And of course, I am so obsessed with learning anything about Buffalo and Western New York people and history. I was so excited when I got an opportunity to talk to our guest and to look at his new book. You are probably familiar with Rick Falkowski because he is practically a household name here in Western New York because of all these. I'm laughing because it's not television, but he's nodding and saying yes because of all the different personifications that he has had and all the different fields that he has been involved with. Many of them involve the media, and you might know of him, but I am going to first welcome you to the program, Rick, and I know that you are the best person to tell your history better than I am and to give a profile about Rick. I know that you are better at that than I am, so I just want to invite you to let our listeners know a little bit about how the different aspects of Western New York that you have been involved in. So the entertainment, music, publishing, I could go on and on, but I'm going to let you.
That's a little difficult because I'm used to writing about other people, not writing about myself.
Well, yeah, you know. But I was going to tell everybody, but I think I'm going to let you. Would you mind?
Oh,
no,
sure.
Of course.
Okay. Well, you know, a little bit about my history, some things that people don't even know. Everybody knows me about being involved in music and entertainment. But my family actually goes back to Europe with their involvement in music and entertainment. My father's family were traveling musicians in Russia, Poland, and they used to go around playing weddings that lasted like about a week long.
Yeah.
You know, back when you had a wedding and you really had a wedding, you know.
In the old country.
In the old country. And then came to the States, and my dad and his brothers were all musicians, early members of the Buffalo Musicians Union. Well, that was on my father's side. On my mother's side, her great-grandfather was known as Duke Durfert. He was a duke in Germany in the area that was part of Poland. So he moved to the United States, and he spoke German, Polish, and English. And he produced plays on the east side of Buffalo. So there was a theatrical background from my mother's side.
And a musical background from your side, from your father's side, and the musical background of you yourself.
Well, then my dad put me on stage when I was like 5 years old. He said, you have to be a musician, you know. And so I started performing professionally when I was like about 13, you know, started playing in taverns. You know, I shouldn't say this, you were a judge. When I was 15, you know, the drinking age was 18.
I didn't hear you say that.
Because I've been 6'1" since I was about 5, you know, so, you know, nobody ever asked me for proof, even though I did lose my false sheriff's card.
But were not drinking, you were entertaining.
Yes,
that's better. That's
yes, it. No,
that's
I exactly. stayed only on the stage. Yeah, I never, okay. you know,
so what was your instrument or what were you singing?
I played bass, I played keyboards, mm-hmm. and I sang. And I always said I was more of a performer than a musician, so I wasn't that great of a musician, but I always enjoyed myself, you know, being up on stage.
And I think it's important how you continued this to institute some places in Buffalo, New York that are well recognized and that have become staples, such as founding the Buffalo Music Hall of Fame.
Correct.
And the Buffalo Music Awards.
Yep, I retired that a few years ago.
Both of those were really important. And then you were the publisher of a magazine, entertainment magazine, other magazines.
Well, Buffalo Backstage, mm-hmm. that was like, we called that the Bible of Buffalo music during mm-hmm. the 1980s. You know, something just about music and music alone. In fact, the Hall of Fame was an outgrowth of that. That's how the Buffalo Music Hall of Fame came into being all the way back, believe it or not, 1983.
And it's continued, and we now have the Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Broadcasters Hall of Fame, Don Angelo, who I worked with at the cable company, ended up starting that. You know, so the two of us, former TCI Adelphia employees, were involved in the broadcast and the Buffalo Music Hall of Fame.
And now, recently, you became interested, or maybe were the whole time, in history. How did that happen?
I always loved history. In fact, in my book, in the acknowledgement, I go into that I wanted to be a history teacher when I graduated from high school. And I went to Fredonia and said, I want to be a history teacher. And they said, no, you don't, because there's no room for history teachers in 1969. You know, so I ended up serving in the Air Force before I graduated from UB and got a degree in business and psychology because I couldn't be a history teacher. But I always loved history. That's one of the reasons I started Buffalo Backstage Magazine. You know, writing all the profiles on musicians and everything like that, it's something that I enjoyed. And then after my career was over with the cable company, I was lucky enough to retire at 63, thank God, you know, and I said, what am I going to do now? So I said, years ago, I wanted to write a book on the history of Buffalo music. So I dug up my notes, you know, it was almost published by Canisius College years ago, and I found everything I had, and I wrote the history of Buffalo music and entertainment. And I was giving talks for the Erie County and at libraries and community centers and everything. And I said, I want to talk about more than just music history. So I said, I loved history. I'm going to write a Buffalo history book. So I started doing the research for this book, which you just mentioned. And the name was originally Historic and Influential People from Buffalo, WNY. And I'd say to people, I'm writing this book on, you know, history of Western New York. And they said, well, you're going to include Tonawanda. You're going to include Hamburg. So I changed the title to Buffalo and Western New York. Then I started writing the book. And I said, I can't fit all the people in here. So the first book became the 1800s, because I profiled 100 people that really founded the Western New York area. And then I had to brand it, so I called it Profiles Volume 1, which becomes the 1800. Next year, I'm going to do Profiles Volume 2, the 1900s. I'm starting to write that now. And I'm saying, oh my God, there's too many people. That might end up being two books. The Profiles Volume 2 will be the early 1900s. Volume 3 will be the late 1900s. This can go on forever.
I guess so, yeah. If you can.
So it's going to make me live long. I asked my doctor, yeah. I said, can you guarantee I'm going to live to 85? Because I got a lot of books to write. And he said, no, I can't, but you know.
But try.
Writing keeps you healthy.
But try. when you tell me how you, well, you just decided on the 1800s, because that is so, I guess that's really the crucial, pivotal time for us here in Western New York, obviously.
Well, you talk about the 1800s. Whenever you're driving around town, you see all these streets. And you said, where did all these street names come from? These street names came from people. You know, you hear all these names of the affluent families that started industry and everything like that in Western New York. You know, they all lived here in Buffalo. Buffalo, Delaware Avenue, Millionaires Row. We had 60 millionaires in Buffalo at the turn of the century. You know, there were more millionaires per capita in Buffalo than there were in New York City or Chicago. And Buffalo was such an affluent place. We have to talk about all these people. And in school, kids don't learn about them. You know, my son wanted to be a history teacher. He couldn't get a job as a history teacher. He became a math teacher. He's still teaching at, you know, Burgard today as a math teacher. You know, but they don't teach the kids in school about what formed our city. You know, so this book, I look at it from the individual perspective, but then I go into what the people accomplished, how the Buffalo Harbor was built, how the Erie Canal was built, you know, what happened during the War of 1812. You know, Buffalo was burned during the War of 1812. Who were the people that were here? Go into a lot of the backstories and everything like that. And then I also try, when I'm writing it, to add levity. You know, put some interesting little stories in there that people won't have heard, you know, someplace else. You know, like Grover Cleveland, for instance. You know, his real first name was Steve. And he was a bachelor, and he lived in rooming houses, and he enjoyed going to all the taverns and drinking German beer and eating all the rich food. Well, Grover Cleveland became a big man, so his friends all called him Big Steve. His nieces and nephews called him Uncle Jumbo. So little stories like that, you know, stuff
That's
that people don't
story.
Know about, you know.
And how did Grover come from? Do we know how he got Grover instead of Steve?
He liked the name Grover more.
He just liked it?
And he just loved it more. And now, you know the story about when he came here, his uncle was Lewis Allen, who was the founder of Allentown. And so Grover Cleveland came to Buffalo, and he went to stay with his uncle. And he says, Uncle, I'm going to be going to Ohio because I want to become an attorney. And he said, well, you can become an attorney in Buffalo. And he says, I'll talk to my attorneys and you can get a job there. And so Grover Cleveland said, I'll just go there and talk to him. So he went there the next day and spoke to Lewis Allen's attorneys, told them he wanted to become a lawyer. Would you hire me? And they said, no, I'm sorry, we don't have any openings. Well, he never mentioned who his uncle was. Well, the next morning at breakfast, Lewis Allen was livid because they didn't hire his nephew. He went to the law firm and said, if you don't want my nephew, you don't want my law business. So they hired him. He became an attorney. And, you know, one thing led to another. He became involved in politics in Buffalo. But an interesting facet about Lewis Allen and Grover Cleveland, well, Grover Cleveland was a Democrat. Lewis Allen was in charge of the Republican Party. Allen never voted for Grover Cleveland in an election, and over political differences, they stopped talking to each other. So some things haven't changed.
No. The more things change, the more they remain the same.
Very
I suppose
true.
That people are saying that. You know, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Penny Wolfgang on Target. I hope you listen every week. And we're talking in the studio with the most fascinating historian you've ever heard, Rick Falkowski. And not only is his background very different, but the history that he's provided is entertaining as well as informative. So I think that's the important part. And when you mentioned different stories about people that we didn't really ever think about, or the insides of people that we didn't think about, a lot of the, like you said, a lot of the things that happened, like the development of, the financial crisis, the harbor, the Buffalo building, the Buffalo Harbor, all of that goes back to the 1800s, which I don't think people realize. And that's why it's such an interesting history.
Well, another interesting thing about that, like, say, the building of the Buffalo Harbor.
Yeah.
Now, when they were building the Erie Canal, they didn't know if the Erie Canal's western terminus was going to be Black Rock or if it was going to be Buffalo. Now, Peter Porter was the proponent for Black Rock being the western terminus for the Erie Canal. A guy named Samuel Wilkerson was the person that wanted Buffalo to be the terminus for the Erie Canal. Wilkerson got along with, you know, worked with some other people, and they actually changed the mouth of the Buffalo Creek or Buffalo River, moving it 1,000 feet south and building a wall going out 1,000 feet because there was a sandbar that was blocking the Buffalo Creek. Then they blocked up the water. The water in the spring ended up getting rid of the sandbar. Buffalo then had a harbor area, which they didn't have before. Because of that, in 1825, Buffalo became the terminus for the Erie Canal rather than Black Rock. So I say Samuel Wilkerson is really the father of Buffalo. If he wouldn't have argued for Buffalo, you know, to be the terminus for the canal, Buffalo wouldn't have become what Buffalo became, you know. And if he wouldn't have won, you know, the argument with Peter Porter, we might be the Black Rock Bills rather than the Buffalo Bills.
Are you listening? The Black Rock Bills. The Black Rock.
And there was a Black Rock that was blocking the channel, and they ended up dynamiting that to build the Erie Canal to go through.
And then when you say Porter, like a person named Porter, again, I'm like, my eyes are wide open. No wonder now we know why Porter Avenue came from and everything to do with Porter. How did you pick, it's obvious that, you know, Grover Cleveland, for instance, would be here. But some of the other names, I think, are amazing because How did you come up with them? How did you, decide that these people were influential in the history of Buffalo
A historian told me the one good thing about writing a book on history is it's author's discretion. You get to choose who you're going to put in. But I chose the people that I thought, were the most important, and also people would learn from. People had stories about them. There's some people that I wanted to include that unfortunately I wasn't able to include. But the people that are in here, I felt like had a big influence, had interesting stories, and their story had to be told. Because you come up with some names like George Foreman. It's not George Foreman, the boxer. It's not George Foreman from the grill.
No.
It's George Foreman who made his money in the oil industry and moved to Buffalo and started Manufacturers and Traders Bank. Things like that, things that these people did that people aren't aware of. Like Roswell Park. I was talking to some people, they didn't realize that Roswell Park was a real person.
I just honestly found that out myself a year or so ago, honestly.
And like the person that really got Roswell Park going with his first institute was William Gratwick. And you have Gratwick Park in North Tonawanda. And he was one of the lumber barons, one of the first people in the lumber industry. So all these people were intertwined. And it's amazing how like the intermarriages of all the people like on Delaware Avenue, the Goodyears and the Rumseys, and they all grew up together, and then everybody got married to the other people. I love the one story where a Goodyear married one of the Knoxes, and they were living at Knox Farm in East Aurora, but they didn't want to live there anymore, so they ended up building their own house on the other side of East Aurora, and that became Cragburn Country Club.
And that is amazing, again, that these are real people, too.
They're all real people, right.
That you can make them, into live, living people in our mind. That, I guess, is the importance of it. Did you find any women? I'm sure.
That's one thing that I made a point of doing when I was writing this book.
Like who?
There are actually 7 females that are included in this book. And I did that because during the 1800s, somebody wasn't Mary Smith. She'd be known as Mrs. John Smith, because
right.
The females, never got the credit, back in the 1800s. The Buffalo Philharmonic. Mrs. Edgar Went was one of the people that formed the Buffalo Philharmonic. That was the 1900s, but you never talked about her first name, So when I was going through, one of the people that I came across that I did not know was from Buffalo, which I thought was very interesting, was Anna Catherine Green. Now, Anna Catherine Green moved to Buffalo when she was about 3 years old. Her father was an attorney and married somebody from Buffalo. And she wanted to become a writer. Well, really, she wanted to become a poet. But then she wrote a book, after she graduated, and it was the first, called The Letchworth Case. It was the first detective novel really written in America. And she's considered the mother of the American detective novels. And she wrote a whole bunch of different books and everything like that. And Sir Conan Doyle, who wrote all the Sherlock Holmes stories, came to Buffalo specifically to meet her before he started writing Sherlock Holmes. Agatha Christie said she was the person that she based herself off of. What Anna Catherine Green wrote was what she wanted to become. Well, Anna Catherine Green moved back to Buffalo because her husband got a job here. Her husband was Charles Rolls, who got a job working for Jewett Stove Company because he was a stove designer. Well, but her husband didn't want to work for the stove company. He wanted to design furniture. And Charles Rolls, the furniture designer, was pre-Stickley, with the American furniture movement. His pieces now sell for $100,000. He's from Buffalo. So the thing is, there's all these intertwining things and these people that were from Buffalo, it's amazing. I give presentations at community centers, senior homes, libraries, and everything like that. And when I give a talk, I always say I have 3 objectives in this talk. The first objective is to remind you of things that you've forgotten. The second objective is to talk about things that you didn't know. The third objective is for you to leave here being proud that you're from Buffalo in Western New York, because there's so much that happened here that it's absolutely amazing.
Well, a lot of the Yes, and this is a good time to be talking proud, as you can imagine. But a lot of the things that happened here were, as you pointed out, they were sort of unknown. But in those days, like electricity, for example, that's probably your next book, the Pan Am Exposition and all of that.
Go ahead.
No, but I mean, we had lights. Electricity was the first street lights, for example. I learned this recently. Were here in Buffalo.
Well, I actually mentioned Tesla in this book because it was during the 1800s that Tesla worked, you know, in taking hydroelectric power to bring it to Buffalo for the Pan Am. Okay, and Pan Am happened in 1901, but obviously all the work from that was done in the 1800s. And there's a building in North Tonawanda on Robinson Road and the Twin City Highway. There was a distribution point for the electricity to go from Niagara Falls to Buffalo through that one building that's still in North Tonawanda. The building's still there. Niagara Mohawk, you know, has it, and then, you know, they're not using it for anything. But the power went through there to come to Buffalo. The very first thing that was electrified in Buffalo were the streetcars. You know, so the streetcars, you know, came to here, and that distribution plant in North Tonawanda, they ended up taking a line and running it to North Tonawanda, and that's how North Tonawanda became a big industrial center, because they had electricity before everybody else. And, you know, you think of the Pan Am, the electricity. You know, it was amazing because people had never seen electricity before. You know, Buffalo had it.
And also, I was looking at the names, and some of them, as I said, are like politicians that we would guess and familiar with or have heard about. But I heard Jenny Lind, and I saw Jenny Lind, and I said, I feel like that, and Maria Love, both, when I said to you, are there women? And both of those names have become, I guess, synonymous. Well, Maria Love, they have a charity named after her. The kids have a dance every year.
Although it came from, because Maria Love started the first daycare center. You know, that was on Swan Street in Buffalo. And she lived in the Carey Mansion. And she was the last member of the Carey Mansion to live in Carey Castle, you know, which became the Normandy Steakhouse, I believe, on Delaware Avenue. And then that was torn down and it became the courthouse on Delaware. That's where the Carey Mansion was. And she lived there. And she traveled all over Europe and everything with the Careys. And she saw the plight of women in Europe. So that's why she started the daycare centers here. She never cared about the money. She didn't have to work, you know. And so she would charge women for their children to be in daycare, whatever they could pay. And then she said, and if you can't pay it when you can. You know, there was the attitude, because the people in Buffalo that had money did things for everybody else within the city. You know, like take the 20th Century Club. Okay, the 20th Century Club was the first woman's club, you know, in Buffalo. And the founder was involved in different charities. And, you know, especially for veterans from the Civil War, because two of her brothers, you know, were killed during the Civil War. And then, you know, they had the club, you know, that was formed and is still in existence today. You know, second oldest women's club founded by women in the United States.
Even that's something I didn't know. As you said, your objective would be that people are not only going to learn about our history, but be proud of the accomplishments of people from Western New York in so many different fields. I just want to say again, we're talking to Rick Falkowski, who's the editor of Historic and Influential People from Buffalo and Western New York, the 1800s, but this is only profile number one. Profile number one. So we can see where this is going, you know, as he already said. What I think is also interesting is the different, let's see, there's art, there's literature, there's finances, there's architecture would be art. Every aspect of our society, you found somebody that's representative.
Correct.
From Western New York.
Right. And what you were just talking about there, you're talking about women, there was Louise Blanchard Bethune, who was from Buffalo. She was the first female architect in the United States.
People talking about her now.
Right.
Even recently.
And the other thing that people don't talk about her, she was a big proponent of women's rights. There was a contest at the Chicago World's Fair to design a building. And the prize for women was like one-tenth of what the prize was for men. So she refused to participate.
Good for her.
And that's the way it should be.
That's amazing.
Like with the arts, you have the Rumsey family. You know, with everything that the Rumseys ended up doing in Western New York. And one point I always bring up about the Rumseys, what people didn't realize, is Buffalo, the square miles of Buffalo was 43 square miles.
In the 1800s.
Now, today, it's 43 square miles. And back at one time, like in the late 1800s, the turn of, you know, the early 1900s, the Rumsey family owned 22 of the 43 square miles of Buffalo. You know, it's
That's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it was mostly, it was farmland. There was, I know the cemetery, for example, was the outskirts. Forest Lawn
right.
was the outskirts.
It was built because it was considered in the country.
Because it was considered the country. So you can imagine. I didn't even know how big Buffalo was until you said it. But you mentioned, and I think it's important for us to know that not just Buffalo, but many other areas are represented. That's why you said Western New York. I just saw somebody from Akron and somebody from, just other places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the South towns, but definitely different areas that are now, considered Western New York.
One big inventor is somebody from Lockport, a guy by the name of Birdsall Howley. Birdsall Howley invented the water distribution systems and the fire hydrant. Okay, and he had the system, because he had all the water power, in Lockport with the locks and everything like that. So he had the system where you distributed water, and the fire hydrant was part of that. He went around selling that to cities all across the United States. One city turned him down, Chicago. After the Chicago fire, they signed three separate contracts, for Birdsall Howley's, system, for doing everything. He also invented the idea of centralized heating, where you could have one plant heating several different buildings within an area, like the Larkin Complex. You have one building that heats everything. There's parts of New York City and Manhattan, that were designed by Howley, where an entire block in Manhattan will be heated by one source. That was a Howley invention, somebody from, Western New York. Orthoniel Marsh from Lockport. He's the person that named most of the dinosaurs. And he grew up in Lockport, looking for trilobites, along the gorge where the Erie Canal was built.
There are so many facts and so much important information we can learn. How can people, they might want, now that we've talked about a few of the people, how could they get this book, or where can they get your book?
The book's available at all the bookstores in Western New York, many of the gift stores, historical societies. It's also available on my webpage, buffalomusichistory.com. And for people out of the area, you can get it on Amazon. It's available nationally. And the book's only been out now for like 6 weeks, but I'm getting word back from people in California and Texas and Arizona and Florida saying, I love your book. It's bringing back so many memories.
As we know, there are once a Western New Yorker, always, or once a Buffalonian, always, and once we root for the Bills, always, no matter where we live, right? Thank you so much, Rick. Thanks so much for telling us about all of this interesting history for Western New York. We love hearing about it on Target. Listen to me again next week, please. Same time, same station. Have a good week, and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.